Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to another edition of the 205 Live NXT Recap Show here on Fightful Select. I am Mr. Warren Hayes, your guide through the Wednesday block of programming over on the WWE Network. I'm glad you guys made it here over on Fightful Select. You guys already supporting Fightful.com through your support of Fightful Select, getting all that extra content. You're seeing everything that's going down. You know all the good stuff. You head over, you look at the newest posts. You see all the great stuff that Sean and I prepare for you guys. Got to see the Sean Ross Sapp and Melissa press conference leading up to the list in your boy 100. We got to see an unedited version of that last week because we're on top of the world. We are the bar to steal someone else's thunder. But you know, that's what's cool, right? That's what's really cool about what we do over here, is that you get all these great little goodies. Do take the time to check them out. Just as I'm glad you're taking the time to check me out, or at least my video, my recap, my podcast. It's going to be fantastic. So listen, 205 Live, NXT, last weekend, both were showcased over the Survivor Series pay-per-view weekend. We had a phenomenal War Games pay-per-view, an extraordinary takeover. Like, from top to bottom, it was outstanding, let's be frank. And arguably, Mustafa Ali and Buddy Murphy over on Survivor Series, main card appearance, they put on arguably the best match of the night. I had a lot of fun. It was good to see this kind of showcase for the underbrands. I don't know how you call them, but it was great. Everyone looked fantastic. So that's good. And you know, by the way, just before I actually dive in here, if you're watching or listening to the podcast on Fightful Select anytime after Wednesday evening, just so you know, maybe you don't realize this, but I do these live for Fightful Select members. So there's a chat room open. John Baez is here. He's in the chat. Why don't you come over next time and join him? We'll have some talk. We'll have better talk than what I'm doing right now, but we'll chit chat, exchange some words. It's a good time to come in, and it's just for Fightful Select members. No outside weirdos coming in, asking for spare change. So do check it out. Maybe you just don't realize it that I do these live. I do them live. Come on in. Enjoy. But whatever, anyway, regardless, I'm glad you're listening right now. Let's hop to it. 205 Live. Now, if you want to hear an extensive version of my thoughts regarding Survivor Series, and particularly this match, well, you can head on over to Fightful.com. I joined Alex Pawlowski and Sean Ross Sapp immediately after the pay-per-view. Got in there. I joined them so that we could talk about the pay-per-view. And of course, we talked about Murphy and Ali. If you don't mind, though, my just sliding in a little here, doing a little sidebar here, I want to say again, I mentioned it just at the start of the show, that was a fantastic show, match. It was a good show as well, but it was a fantastic match. I mean, first and foremost, I was thrilled when we were plowing through that 2-hour pre-show that nobody needs. Nobody asks for a 2-hour pre-show. Anyway, when we got through the pre-show and the Cruiserweight title was not defended, I was like, oh, fantastic. That means that means they're going to be on the main card. And that really made me happy. And this is something that you'd think that they as in WWE, they do more, as in promote 205 Live over on the main card, on the main rosters, but they don't. But now they did it here. They went and gave it a really solid place, really great positioning on the card as well. And the guys had enough time to tell a great story in a fantastic match. Buddy Murphy positioning himself as the juggernaut, the immovable object, the invincible guy, strong, all of his offense very much strength-based, with Mustafa Ali being, as they call him, you know, the heart of 205 Live, very dexterous and agile, nimble, quick offense. But early on, the story was Ali's offense is not enough. His strikes aren't enough. Murphy is just too strong. I liked the story that they were telling. It wasn't being shoved down our throats like, oh, big guy versus little guy, like WWE are so capable of doing. This was nice and nuanced. And we had some crazy moments. Murphy hitting that Topikon Hilo where he just flew. Like literally, I think as he did it, I think for a few minutes, I think gravity just gave up on him at some point. Ali hit that Spike Rana at some point. That actually generated 205 chants from the audience. We got a Spike DDT as well from the ropes. The Spanish Fly off the commentator's table. Then Buddy Murphy putting his strength up on display. Powerbomb into a sit-out powerbomb. It was fantastic. And just the fact that people were chanting 205 Live out there, just because they were doing that, it should be proof enough that if you give these guys, if you give the cruiserweights a little more wiggle room, you'll be able to build the brand as you want it. I'm not saying to give a cruiserweight title. Let me start over. I'm not saying that you should give a cruiserweight match on every Raw like it was the norm a few months ago, a year ago. But once in a while, give us a marquee match. Give us a championship match. Alex Pulowski and I think the exact same way about this. Have them come up once a month, and you have a big title match, Buddy Murphy against someone on the roster, on the Cruiserweight roster, and just let them tear down for 10, 15 minutes. And then go back to 205 Live. I honestly don't know why they do that, why they don't do it anymore. Doesn't have to be every week. Just make it special. All right, so into the show now. Buddy Murphy comes out, and he has a microphone. And this doesn't happen very often on 205 Live, where he actually comes out with the mic, but I thought he was going to cut a promo about still being champion, so on and so forth, but he does say, welcome to my 205 Live. Question for all of you. Did you really think that Mustafa Ali was going to defeat me? Well, you can't stop what's unstoppable. And Tony Nese comes out to join him, and they're still a duo. They're still buddies. They're still chums. And they head down to the ring because Tony Nese has a match against Noam Dar. So I actually thought at first that he was going to cut more of a promo, but it didn't. Kept it short, and I like that. Basically, to get heat. Leo Rush does that sometimes. TJP does that sometimes, comes out. But I was really expecting for him to come out and cut a I'm the Champ promo. But no, it just naturally led into this match here. Noam Dar. Commentary puts over Vic, especially Vic and Nigel, who do NXT UK. They put over how great Noam Dar's match against Pete Dunne was, how fantastic it was. Nigel does mention his match against Zach Gibson, but as good as Dar's match against Dunne was, his match against Zach Gibson was bananas. It was amazing. So you should, and I know that because I cover NXT UK, and Why am I not covering NXT UK tonight, perchance? Do you wonder? Well, it's because WWE are still putting back-to-back episodes of NXT UK, folks. So we are going to, once again this week, do a NXT UK special show tomorrow, Thanksgiving, a special Thanksgiving edition of the Fightful Select NXT recap show. But on top of that, not only are we going to do that tomorrow, we're going to do it. We're going to give it away for free. We're going to give it so that everyone who is not a FightfulSelect.com member can head on over and take a look at what they're missing out. What John in the chat knows, what everyone watching right now knows, how great the service is. So we're going to give them a look at what we do by giving them the NXT UK recap show tomorrow, 8 p.m. Again, live right here on FightfulSelect.com, open for all to enjoy. Call it the Warren Hayes pre-Black Friday special. Let's call it that. That's right, John. Thanksgiving with Mr. Warren Hayes. All right, now back to the match here. Nice is overpowering Dar at first, and Dar tries to get the upper hand by going for an armbar, but can't. Dar then starts taunting Jan Tony Nice and baits him into a spinning backslide pin, but only gets two. Dar starts taking Nice's knee out. That's actually a kind of a tongue twister. That's probably something that they teach you in broadcasting school. Nice's knees. He took out Nice's knees. He drop kicks Nice to the outside, and Dar follows him out. He argues with Buddy Murphy on the outside, and that allows your boy Nice to ram him right into the ring. Nice then hits an over the knee gut buster back in the ring, and it's a running forearm by Nice, and then gets into a waist lock that Dar fights out of. Nice gets him back with the knee. But Dar dodges a crossbody, and he uses some combination strikes to take Nice down. Now, at this point, the story, John, don't call him Tony Abs ever again. That was Enzo calling Tony Nice Tony Abs. That's banned. That terminology is banned from the chat, John, you should know better than to reference Enzo here, John. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, it's okay, John. I know you're sorry. You didn't do it on purpose. You're apologized. We still love you. What was I about to say here? Yeah, no. So the story of the match here, basically at this point, was that they were overall evenly matched. There was a lot of back and forth happening here, with neither guy really getting one over. They were really exchanging a lot of blows, exchanging moves, kicking out and countering and coming back, a lot of battling back. It was really interesting. Nice has some battles back. He gets some combination strikes on Dar, and he ends up with Dar catching him being Nice, in a guillotine. But Tony Nice does get out. He lands on his feet after a springboard moonsault, and Dar goes back into a guillotine. Nice hits a Northern Lights suplex, gets into a bridge, but only gets two. Nice tosses Dar into the ropes and chases like right behind him. And I love these spots. Tosses him into the ropes. He runs right behind him. And just as Dar bounces off, he nails him with a big forearm. It was severe, folks. But Noam Dar battles back. He goes for the, what's the name of his finisher again? The rolling, the Nova Roller. There we go. I'm all here, folks. I'm all here. He goes for the Nova Roller, or at least sets up for the Nova Roller, but Murphy distracts him on the outside, and Nice hits a big knee to the back, hits his wicked German suplex into the bottom turnbuckle, then hits the running knee to a fallen Noam Dar. Goes for the cover and gets the win. Are they really going? Because Nigel usually doesn't fool around with finisher names. He doesn't get all goofy. He's usually pretty spot on. Are they really going for Tony Nese's running knee? Are they really using the running knees? Is that what they're really using? Because that's what he said. The running knees! Anyway, after the match, Murphy gets a cheap shot in on Noam Dar. And clearly here, Buddy Murphy establishing the fact that the whole of the Cruiserweight division goes through them being he and Tony Nese. And at this point, hard to disagree. Low-key, Tony Nese has, and I think I've mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when he was having his matches against Cedric Alexander. Tony Nese, low-key, has become one of WWE's most consistent workers. He has been so good recently. He's really on a tear. 205 Live, that match he had with Johnny Gargano, I think it was in, I want to say October, early October, maybe late September, which was really good. He's been running the house show circuit with the NXT crew. So he's probably getting nimble. Noam Dar nailed some fantastic matches over on NXT UK, like the ones that were mentioned previously against Pete Dunne, against Zach Gibson, and I can't put that match over enough. Not enough people have seen it yet. It was amazing. So these guys here, they put on a very competitive, enthralling opening match. The back and forth, it wasn't all one-sided. It didn't fall into any real tropes. You know, the babyface wasn't in that much trouble for most of the match. There was a lot of exchanging going around. I really dug it. I'm becoming, slowly but surely, a Tony Nese stan. I'm all in for Tony Nese. We have Mustafa Ali backstage. He says he hurts. He's hurting on the inside. He wants to embrace the pain of his loss at Survivor Series. And that's why... this isn't him. That's not how Mustafa Ali speaks. This is like it's his emotion that speaks with this accent. He wants to embrace the pain of his loss. That way, when he's tempted to stay down, he will remember this pain and he'll rise back up. He's going to work harder, dig deeper, and promises to us all that he will become Cruiserweight champion. But then we have Drake Maverick backstage, and he's telling the referee who will be overseeing the main event tonight that Maria Kanellis made a threat last week, so he has to stay sharp. You have to stay on the ball tonight, ref. We don't want Maria Kanellis, new freshly anointed mother. You don't anoint a mother. What's the word I'm looking for? You don't anoint a mother. She's a new mom. She has, you don't want her new momness or her long red hair to come mess up the main event of 205 Live. Anointed mother. What am I thinking about? And then Cedric Alexander comes in. And Drake says, oh, I'm glad you're back on your winning ways. You know what we're going to do next week? We're going to give you a match. You and Mustafa Ali versus Tony Nese and Buddy Murphy. And I'm like, whoa, Christmas comes early to 205 Live. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? Folks, what you have to do now, you have to take your phones. You open up your calendar apps. If you have one of these paper notebooks, these paper agendas, you clear out your schedule. You take a pen and you clear out your schedule and you write down that it's happening next week. Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander versus Tony Nese and Buddy Murphy. I was going to call him Bobby. Buddy Murphy. That's going to be something else. Showcase time. We have Akira Tozawa and the Brian Kendrick versus a couple of jabronis. I like to use the word jabroni whenever I can because it's not necessarily something you can plug in everyday parlance. So it looks like they're ready to set their tension aside, that they being Tozawa and Kendrick. Meanwhile, you have Drew Gulak and Jack Gallagher who are watching Tozawa and Kendrick make their entrance. And Gulak, you know how they turn, they have the superstars looking like at the TV like this, like three quarters turn. Gulak looked ridiculous. He looked particularly uncomfortable in that position. And it looked like he didn't know what to do with his hands. He was super stiff. It looked dumb. It looked dumber than usual. It always looks dumb, but it looked particularly dumb. And they're, they basically cut a quick heel promo on the faces. We get to the match. Oh, Gulak referred to he and Jack Gallagher as the submission commission. It feels still very political, doesn't it? We have to set up the submission commission to investigate, how many people would tap out to a regular armbar versus a Kimura, let's say. I thought that was really, I hope that sticks. That's the kind of thing I really hope sticks. You get back. Now we're in the ring. Kendrick arm drags one of the dudes. Tozawa hits his senton. They go for some strikes, double team boots. Kendrick covers for two. Tozawa hits a shining wizard for two. Tozawa and Kendrick do a back kick side lush Russian leg sweep combo. That was harder to say than it looks. Heel kick by Kendrick, who tags Tozawa in. He gets some kicks in too, goes up top. Missile drop kick. But it all comes to a crashing halt when Kendrick hits sliced bread number two. Tozawa with the top rope senton. That's all she wrote. After the match, they do Tozawa's chants together. I don't do it quite as with the same type of inflection because Tozawa sort of goes up, right? It's like, it's more like a crow than me going like me. Being a bad infomercial actor, It's like, have you ever noticed that there are stains on your table that just won't go away? Reactions are abound backstage when we run into Buddy Murphy, who basically says, why are we getting a tag team match next week? Are we finally getting those tag team championships everyone's talking about? And I popped on my couch. I was like, whoa. They're actually mentioning it on air. Does this mean that we are inching closer to it? Because that's my theory right now. There's a whole lot of pairings right now in 205 Live. Are we finally going to get them? They've been mentioned on air by the champ. I don't think he has the latitude to go off script just yet, but John says, gosh, I hope so. And so do I. Maybe that's what we're going to kick off next week with Alexander and with the tag team match. We'll see. Main event time. Need a glass of just a sip of. Grand Metalik versus TJP. I wonder if TJP, last night, since the Cruiserweights travel with the SmackDown crew, I wonder if he went backstage last night after the show, went up to Randy Orton. You know, Randy Orton was probably still hanging on to the Rey Mysterio's mask. Went up to him and said, "Hey, brother, that's gimmick infringement." Think he did that? I was actually wondering if they were still going to keep going forward with this on 205 Live since Randy Orton's, you know, decided to steal Mysterio's mask. You know, WWE can be weird sometimes about that kind of stuff. Anyway, Maria Kanellis comes out after the Lucha House Party make it to the ring. But Mike Kanellis is not there, and she's laughing. She finds it silly, and then she goes like this, and then TJP and Mike Kanellis come out, and they are wearing TJP's trophies, the masks of Lucha House Party, and Lucha House Party are not, they aren't standing for this. Nigel says, "Oh, look, we have Grand Kanellis and TJP still," which I thought was pretty funny. TJ Lindsay would have been a guess of mine, but it's not as funny as TJ Pisto, which I think is pretty funny. TJ Pisto. Anyway, there's a scuffle. They, you know, Drake Maverick comes out with some refs to try and keep everyone from beating each other down. And he just sends everyone to the backs. Like, "You're not in the match. You go backstage. You're not in the match. You go backstage. You're not in the match. You go backstage." Everybody gets to go backstage. But then we get to the match. Grand Metalik in the ring with TJP. There's a very early Topikon Hilo by Grand Metalik. Springboard body splash covers TJP, but only gets two. He hits a reverse sling blade. He walks the ropes, but gets caught by TJP, who gets him into a sharpshooter. Metalik eventually reaches the ropes to break it up and rolls to the outside. TJP follows in with a die, and he ground and pounds Metalik when he gets back into the ring. TJP starts pulling at the mask again, but it doesn't go any further than that. Just a little tug, a little nudge, a little psychological warfare. Suplex roll. He does his suplex, then holds on to it, rolls into a side suplex, goes for the cover, only gets two. Metalik battles back, bouncing off the ropes with an arm drag. TJP goes for a double underhook something. It didn't quite execute properly, did it? Vic called it a gut buster. Even though he kind of landed on his lower back, Metalik did. And Nigel called it a kind of atomic drop. You know, everyone was just basically saying, "No, this wasn't exactly what was supposed to happen." TJP figure fours the legs of Metalik and bridges over to and pulls back on the head. Metalik punches him a couple of times to have him release the head, but he still holds the leg lock. Eventually, Metalik does reach the ropes. There's a nice enziguri to the side of TJP's head while he sits on the top rope. Shenanigans on that top rope lead to Metalik drop kicking TJP, like when he's caught in a sort of a reverse tree of woe. Goes for a cover for two. Moonsault from the top rope by Metalik, but TJP puts up his legs. Metalik, eat some foot. Eat some foot, Metalik. Tiger driver by TJP only gets two. Second rope drop kick by Metalik. He goes for a cover, gets 2.5. It wasn't quite a 9. TJP fights back, gets a drop kick to Metalik's face in the ropes. On the apron, Metalik runs through and hits a running Hurricane Rana from the apron to the floor. That was cool. Spot of the night right there. Back in the ring, Metalik driver doesn't get the job done. Goes for the, well, he doesn't even cover, actually. He hits the Metalik driver. Everyone's expecting a pin, but no. He goes to the third rope walk and the elbow drop. But as he's falling, as he's dropping the elbow, TJP catches his arm into an arm bar. Smooth transition into a knee bar because he's TJP and he really is a submission specialist. And then TJ, but yeah, eventually Metalik does reach the ropes. TJP tries to use the pinatas for some reason, and then Metalik goes and puts the pinata back. There's a couple of roll throughs. There's a Hurricane Rana, and then they start rolling through a couple of times. But eventually TJP gets the pin, and it's sort of out of nowhere. And you're like, what? What? Well, okay, we're done. Okay. Maria Kanellis comes out and she has a mic and she's hysterical. She's saying, I have a family. What are you doing? And Drake Maverick is there. She seems to be angry that Drake Maverick prevented something here. I'm not quite sure what happened. It was strange, her motivation here, but it was to serve as a distraction for Mike Kanellis to come in through the audience with a chair. And then he and TJP proceed to beat down all three members of the Lucha House Party. Maverick is trying to get things back in control. This story is not over yet, folks. We're not done yet. I like this match. Not as much as the opening match. I thought it had a better pace. I thought Dar and Nice worked better together. Metalik and TJP, it's not the first time we see these two go at each other. They're not quite in sync with each other. There's just a little something that keeps them like a step behind each other. Anyway, I'd like to point out that on 205 Live tonight, the rumored Cruiserweight tag team titles were referenced on air, as I mentioned, but we did not hear a single word about Drake Maverick pissing himself. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the best timeline. Let's move over. Change gears. NXT. We get a, well, NXT tonight was a recap, right? It's a post NXT. It's a post takeover NXT, so there's never much going on in these evenings. We get a recap of takeover to start off, so why don't we do that as well? I'm not going to go as extensively as I did when I joined Sean Ross Sapp and Alex Pawlowski after takeover last Saturday. I joined them on the post show again. Yes, I joined them on the post show on Saturday. Joined them on the post show on Sunday. My goodness, your boy Warren is rolling all over the place. He's in demand. In demand. No, well, in reality, Jeff Hawkins just he wasn't available. He was actually at the event. Let's be frank. Let's be honest. No, but well, I was happy to be there, and I'm glad. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, of course. But Jeff was there, but Sean was immediately like, "Oh yeah, Warren, come on in." It was fantastic, fantastic. Well, thank you, John. John says, "I love that three-man crew." He calls us the Four Horsemen of Fightful. I wonder which one I am. Maybe Famine. That's what I think. That's the one I'd take anyway. So I'm not going to go as extensively as I did during the post show, is what I'm trying to get at. You can go check that out. But it was a fantastic, fantastic show. Starting off with Matt Riddle. First of all, Triple H lied to us. He said that we were only going to get four matches because War Games needed time and the 2 out of 3 falls needed time. So I was like, and I remember being excited about this. I talked about it last week. I was pumped. I was like, what a great decision. This guy knows what's going on. No, he lied to us. And in the post show, not post show, but post takeover press conference, he said it himself. He said, I lied. He just straight up said, ah, it was a lie. But we got the surprise debut of Matt Riddle, who basically just destroyed Cassius Ohno. Apparently, this was revealed tonight. It is the quickest unscheduled match victory in the history of NXT. That's oddly specific. The quickest unscheduled match victory in the history of NXT. There's something Riddle can hang his hat on. Anyway, so it was a great way for him to debut. Despite the fact that I had said previously that I hope that the two out of three falls had a long time to develop and wasn't squeezed into like a 10, 12 minute match, even though the match lasted about 11 minutes. The pace that Shayna Baszler and Kairi Sane worked completely made up for the shorter match. That was so crazy. It was bonkers how fast the ladies were working. And then with all the interference, the horsewomen coming in, Io Shirai, Dakota Kai, everyone was hitting their spots. The timing was flawless on everything they did. No one missed a beat. It was extraordinary. Such a great match. And of course, that moonsault from Io Shirai in skinny jeans and boots. Beautiful. It was gorgeous. We got some footage actually from Shayna after the match with she was flanked by Marina Shafir and Jasmine Duke, and she says she's the most dominant woman in this division, the most dominant woman this division has ever seen, Asuka. But she says no one, and this is interesting, she says no one can stop us, the three of them, right? So are they really setting this up for them to be like an undisputed era of the NXT women's division? I am all for that. That's something I would like. We had Johnny Gargano versus Aleister Black. Arguably, Aleister Black, not even arguably, that was Aleister Black's best NXT match. Johnny Gargano with another match of the year candidate. That makes like what? How many match of the year candidates did he have? Does he have this? Like 9? That was fantastic. What a great match. Personally, that was my favorite match of the card. It was crazy. What a pace they ran. What a story they told. Elite level storytellers in that ring. It was extraordinary. And Aleister won that match. We had Tommaso Ciampa versus Velveteen Dream. I had posited, I had talked about it, said that this was the match that lacked the most gravitas, that had the least amount of buildup from all of the matches on the card. And yet, whoo, did it deliver. What a fight those guys did. Velveteen Dream is a prodigy. He was aping moves from Hogan, from Macho Man, from friggin' Arn Anderson during the match. And then Tommaso Ciampa, most hated man in wrestling. But man, can that guy go? He is a bit of a total package, guys. Strong, can tell compelling stories, sells like a crazy. He's such a good seller, and I think it's understated how great of a seller he is. He makes his opponents look like champions. He's grown so much into this character as well that since becoming champion. He's added another level to who he is. It's amazing. What a great, great match we had. And then it finished with War Games, of course, with the baby faces going over. Done, Ricochet. The War Raiders. I would have had the Undisputed Era go over again. I would have liked it to be like their thing, their signature match. You know, that when they leave NXT, when they eventually do get called up, well, you know, the War Games continue. Well, the shadow of the Undisputed Era over that match looms large, kind of thing. That was crazy. It was another cuckoo match. I think I kind of liked last year's a little better. Maybe because my expectations were a little higher this year. I'm not sure, but I'm not discrediting it. I'm not saying that it was bad by any stretch of the imagination. It was a fun match. At this point, if I'm down to the point where I'm like, now let's see which one of the two did I prefer, I'm splitting hairs, to be perfectly honest. I think someone may be, I don't know if you hear that. I think someone may be maybe removing snow from my driveway. But maybe you didn't hear it. And that's fine. Apologies if you did hear the trucks. So War Games was fantastic. We had a couple of things happening tonight. We had Keith Lee versus Fidel Bravo. It just dawned on me that Fidel Bravo was one of the two jabronis from 205 Live that Kendrick and Tozawa defeated, I think. I think so. Anyway, Keith Lee, man, what a megastar this guy is. What an absolute machine. Like, he's a total package, man. The size, agility, and charisma. Oh, you just want to be his best friend. You want him to be your best friend. You both want to be best friends with that guy. Bravo interrupts the Bask in His Glory chants with a shove on Keith Lee. And he eats a left fist from Lee for his trouble. Double hand chop in the corner by Lee. Cross body block by the Limitless One. And a jackhammer to put Fidel Bravo away. So nice little showcase match there for your boy Fidel. Showcasing how well he can be, how quickly he can be defeated. A showcase match for Keith Lee. Next, we have main roster bound Lars Sullivan. Main roster is waiting for our boy Lars. Will it be Raw? Will it be SmackDown? First of all, before we go any further, over under on how long they start calling him just Lars and they drop the Sullivan. Vince McMahon, just to make sure, you know, you're not thinking I'm talking about another Vince, like Vince Gill, for instance. Vince doesn't like last names, doesn't he? He just loathes them. He dislikes them. So how long will it take over under? How long will it take for him before they just start calling him Lars? I say 2 months. 2 months. And John here in the chat is saying he's going to end up on Raw. Raw currently has its fill of big invincible beasts, big manly men that are immovable objects. You have Braun, you have Brock. You have Drew. That's, you know, between those three, and one could even argue Bobby Lashley. You could argue that Bobby Lashley could fall into that category as well, since he's become a heel. I really think that his place is on SmackDown, because SmackDown doesn't have that type of character. You'd think they'd have it in Samoa Joe, but they're not treating Samoa Joe properly. I think he's going to end up there. That would be my guess, my educated guess. I wouldn't put it past WWE to surprise me and drop him on Raw, which is already stacked with big guys, because Vince likes his big guys. And Raw's pretty much Vince's show these days. But anyway, I'm glad. I'm happy for Lars. He's been in developmental for a while. I think he's improved tremendously in the past year. I don't know if he's really ready to... Well, no. Let me say that again. I think that where he is right now, how his style has developed, I think he's a perfect fit for main roster. I think it's about time that he leaves NXT because I think that his style of wrestling doesn't mesh well with what the rest of the NXT roster is capable of doing, and especially not what the NXT universe expects of their NXT superstars, which is one of the reasons why, it's just an educated guess here. I believe it's one of the reasons why Elias, the Drifter, was called up so quickly. Same thing with Noé Jose. I think these are gimmicks, characters, if you will, that work so much better on main than on NXT, which still has that indie feel. So Lars comes out for a match. He avalanches his opponent in the corner, slams him down, basement lariat, freak accident, and that's that. He picks up a microphone and he asks for his NXT championship match. He goes back to beat up on his opponent some more, and he's probably setting it up for another freak accident, but in runs Keith Lee, who's had enough of these shenanigans, Lars. Keith Lee is in to make a statement on the monster that is Lars Sullivan, and he tackles him out of the ring. A little later on, there's a backstage confrontation between the two where they jaw at each other. And William Regal, wasting no time, smelling the money. He says, oh, this is too good to pass up. This is equal subscriptions to the WWE Network. Lars versus Keith Lee next week on NXT. I am ready for that. That will be fantastic. Our main event, Nikki Cross versus Candice LeRae. I'm not getting into a Candice LeRae as Johnny Gargano's wife rant tonight, folks. I'm not. I could, but I'm not. I thought it was smart to have Candice LeRae come out for a match in California, in Los Angeles. It's her stomping grounds. She's from Southern California. It was a good call for them to come out. And I was like, well, there you go. This is a win for your girl Candice here, which could have been smart. There's some back and forth at first. Cross finally ends up dropping LeRae on the apron face first, and then uses the ring skirt to pummel her some more. She tosses LeRae back in, but LeRae spins around and kicks Nikki before she actually gets fully back in the ring. She sort of spins on her back while she's on the mat. That was pretty cool. LeRae hits a spinning crossbody to the outside. That kind of turned into a knee because she overshot a little. Shotgun drop kick by LeRae in the ring. Covers Cross, only gets two. Cross with a belly-to-back suplex. She avalanches LeRae in the corner. Tries to go for her bulldog, one of her signature Nikki Cross moves, but LeRae just sort of pops her head out of the headlock, whoop, just like that. And if you listen carefully, it makes that noise. Whoop. You can go back and listen. Leave a comment. If you find it didn't say that, it didn't make that sound, you can just say, Warren, you're full of crap. The bulldog. Yes. Okay. So she gets out of the bulldog. I lost my place in my notes. Running neck breaker by Candice with a step up senton by LeRae, which was also pretty cool. She hits a none prettier, goes for the lion salt, but Cross rolls out of the way. Purge! The purge by Nikki Cross covers Candace, but she kicks out! No one has ever kicked out! Mauro says it! No one has ever kicked out of the purge! If Mauro says it, you know it's true! Top rope shenanigans lead to LeRae hitting a second rope German. Covers Nikki Cross for two. Nikki Cross starts going crazy, starts laughing. Of course, she's still enjoying herself in the ring. Candace lays in with some chops and forearms, goes back for another flurry of chops and forearms. She pummels Cross down to the ground. She deathlocks the legs and pulls back on Nikki's hair, then stomps her face into the mat. That was nasty looking. She goes in for the Gargano escape, of course. But I'm not ranting. Just pointing out. Nikki reaches the ropes to break the Gargano escape, though. And it all ends with Nikki hitting a draping, twisting neck breaker on Candice LeRae from the top rope. And Nikki Cross wins? All right. It is. I'm going to let you in on a secret here. I have no idea. I have no idea what they're doing with Candace LeRae. I don't understand. It seemed like the perfect first and foremost, like I said first, at the first and foremost first, firstly, it made perfect sense for Candace to have a win. She's in her stomping grounds. She's home, basically. People in the audience know her. They've seen her in PWG. This may, I don't understand how the just on based on that, how this wouldn't have been the perfect catalyst to begin Candice LeRae's NXT push. Not asking for a push, just a few wins. She kicks out of the purge. What was the point of kicking out of Nikki Cross's protected finisher? Mind you, if she wasn't going to win the match, that baffled me. I don't understand at all what they're doing with Candice LeRae. It was she had some great offense here. The match was fine. The match was good. It was a good match between the both. And LeRae had a diverse arsenal of offense here. She was a joy to watch. But it's so strange. It is so, so strange that California, all right, like John says, you know, yes, WWE doesn't like the hometown wins. All right. But okay. Let's just take away the California context. She kicks out of the purge. Commentary puts it over. No one has ever kicked out. But Nikki gets the win anyway. It's weird. It's weird booking, guys and girls. It's weird. Anyway, recap edition of NXT post takeover. So it was, it was what it was. Lots of clips. But we did get a setup for Keith Lee versus Lars Sullivan next week. And I mean, if you want to see arguably Candice LeRae's best NXT match so far, well, go check it out. I mean, it's not a bad match. Far from it. It's a good match. I don't want to undersell it. It's a good match. They work well together. Cross and LeRae do. But I mean, otherwise the show is extremely bare bones. You know, it's a post takeover show. So that's that. So guys, remember tomorrow evening, Thanksgiving, Thursday, the 22nd of November, right here on FightfulSelect.com. Spread the word, a free preview the NXT UK recap show that I will bring unto you, such as the Pilgrims brought, such as the Native Americans brought the Pilgrims a spread of joyous foodstuffs and agriculture. I will bring unto you the NXT UK recap show we're giving it away for free. It's a free preview. It's a free preview for everyone to come see what Fightful Select is. So send the word out, tell your friends. It'll be great. Can't wait to be here. Otherwise, come back and see me next Wednesday. If you haven't been watching this live, I do it live. You can also come jump in. And to everyone in the United States, tomorrow, everyone watching, I hope you have a fantastic Thanksgiving. I hope you have fun. You have a great time with loved ones and with people who love you back. And be safe. Be safe, Fightful Select members. We want y'all to come back and keep enjoying the wonderful, wacky world of 205 Live and NXT. Thank you very much for joining me this evening, everyone. We'll see you next time.